Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sue Mee Terry, who's a senior research scholar at the Weatherhead East Asia Institute at Columbia University and the managing director at Gerson Global Advisors. Previously, she was a National Intelligence Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, the former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council, and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs at the National Security Council. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sue Mee Terry.
Thank you.
And what do you make of the execution of Kim Jong-un, the new young Korean leader's uncle, who, of course, is married to his father's sister, and he was something of a mentor from what we understand?
Yes.
It does seem that it has exploded the myth that's kept this dynasty in power and kept the kind of North Korean people in worship and obedience, has been this idea that they are a godlike family dynasty. And now we're learning that there is not harmony, shall we say, within the family.
Yes, it absolutely shatters the facade of regime unity that they were peddling, and it shows that, you know, the elites may not all have truly accepted Kim Jong-un's rule. And this act of executing his uncle, the number two guy, I mean, the guy, you know, of his very mentor, is really unprecedented, even for a country like North Korea. This is the first time in 65-year history of North Korea that a high-level member of the Kim family has been executed. So this also shows me that Kim Jong-un is not, you know, because this tomorrow is the second-year anniversary of Kim Jong-il's death. And I remember when Kim Jong-il first died 2 years ago, many analysts were hoping to see some sort of shift in North Korea's policies, you know, towards greater moderation and change or democracy and so on. Well, these hopes have been dashed. And not only is he, you know, every bit the megalomaniac or absolute dictator that his father and his grandfather were, I actually now think Kim Jong-un is worse. He's even more dangerous and reckless than either his father or grandfather.
So he really could be a kind of impetuous boy, almost. You're suggesting that he's more dangerous because he lacks maturity?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, he just recently, just a couple of days after executing his uncle, he went back to this extravagant ski resort that he's building. And he just then boasted how everyone in the world is going to marvel at the magnificence of this ski resort that he's building in Pyongyang. And, you know, when people are talking about reforming North Korea, what reform? Everything has been cosmetic and superficial. He built an extravagant ski resort. He built a massive water park, a horse riding club. I mean, if this is not complete immaturity and a sign of, a 30-year-old, you know, boy, inexperienced person, I don't know what could be. This is after he killed his uncle. He went back to the ski resort. So I feel that we're now dealing with, at least Kim Jong-il has had an experience of 20 years of following, you know, being groomed. Kim Jong-un just became this leader. And, you know, I'm actually now more concerned about North Korea and the future than I ever was.
So is that to say that Uncle Jang, who was executed, who apparently had close ties with China, which, again, is hard to believe that since China is the only country that supports North Korea and effectively is their economic and energy lifeline, you would wonder why they would want to hurt that relationship.
Right. I mean, this is why I say he's very impetuous. And I think North Korea's relationship with China is finally in danger now. I can't even begin to imagine what the Chinese would make of this. As you just mentioned, Chang Sung-taek was the face of North Korea. He had a close relationship with China. He was a liaison, go-between North Korea and China. And he was also sort of reform-minded. He was the one who was in favor of Chinese-style economic reforms, and he's been pushing that. He's also, Chang Sung-taek is also the one responsible for the appointment of Park Bong-ju, who is to the post of premier, to spearhead a push to improve economy. So I'm sure this This execution now both means that Park Bong-ju, who is the premier, and the whole economic opening are both endangered. And Beijing, I'm sure, is very unhappy about this, even though right now they're, you know, they're staying quite mum.
Again, I'm speaking with Sumi Terry, who's a senior research scholar at the Weatherhead East Asia Institute at Columbia University and the managing director at Gerson Global Advisors. Previously, she was a National Intelligence Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, the former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council, and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs at the National Security Council. So it would seem to me, again, in terms of this being a self-defeating move, or shooting oneself in the foot here in North Korea, is the fact that all of these phony charges against his uncle, where he was accused of drug use, gambling, and plotting coups, all of which, of course, were broadcast on the only media that the country has. Again, it must, even for the most brainwashed of North Koreans, they must think, something's wrong with the ship of state here. The number two guy is plotting to bring down the regime.
No, and I think now what this means is, this Jang's execution may cow the elites at least temporarily for the short term, because their lives are in danger. But I think the long run effect would be very corrosive. The elites now know that this guy is capable of turning on any of them. If you could kill a close relative like Jang Song-taek, then they know they're not safe. No one is safe. So if I were a member of the North Korean elite at the moment, I would be giving a serious thought to either defecting to South Korea or, coming up with some sort of plan to get rid of this guy before he gets rid of me. I mean, wouldn't you think that's a normal thought process as a North Korean elite? No one is safe now. So, right.
So do you think, though, Sumi Terry, that there is a kind of reign of terror going on? The Korean specialist at the University of Chicago, Bruce Cummings, has described Kim Jong-un as a modern Caligula.
Yes, I think absolutely. And particularly, all the Jang Song-taek followers will be gone. In 1950s, Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-un's grandfather, did purge many, many people. So I think this is what's going to happen now. Many more elites will be purged, because Jang Song-taek himself had a lot of people who followed him. So anyone with close ties, or even, remotely was close to Jang Song-taek, I'm sure their lives are going to be threatened now.
And those show trials in the 1950s that his grandfather did, obviously they consolidated his power, but did they do any damage?
No, I mean, he consolidated his power, but this is even different, because even Kim Il-sung did not kill his own family member. So, I think it's a very different situation. And you have to remember the fact that Kim Jong-un had no ties of his own. He was not educated in North Korea. He did not have his own network of people. He's only 30 years old in a society, very Confucian-like society where age matters, experience matters. He's inexperienced, he's young, he's untested, and now we know not all the elites were behind this guy. So I think this is just a bad sign going forward. I don't think any elites could trust him, not with coming up with the right policies. Not only that, but I think now everyone will be overly scared. I know that's what Kim Jong-un wanted, is to scare the living crap out of the elites. But I think this will have a long-term negative effect for Kim Jong-un.
Well, we know that this regime is capable of creating outside tensions in order to foster internal cohesion. They do that regularly. They sink warships on the South Korean side. They send over agents to do assassinations. They threaten war. They closed down the enterprise zone recently. I mean,
yes.
There's been a series of these actions. So does that mean that we should expect another threat on that Korean peninsula?
Absolutely. I can bet everything. If I'm a gambling person, I'll bet everything I have on that. Already, this whole provoke and get paid cycle, we were on the peace offensive cycle. Remember earlier this year with the third nuclear test and so on, there was a whole provoke cycle and we were on the peace offensive cycle. And there was already, you know, sort of we're reaching the end of that cycle. So now with this kind of instability, increased instability at the top of the North Korean government, they have every reason to go off with another round of provocations to consolidate control and to sort of, you know, it's coming. I would say a matter of maybe months. So early next year, I expect another missile test or nuclear test or another limited attack against South Korea, such as the Cheonan Sikking before long.
So Sumi Terry, I recall, I think it was after the last series of threats, that North Korean state media showed Kim visiting various military outposts, and he came ashore in a little boat like George Washington. And then I recall seeing these, you know, elderly generals and colonels or whatever in the North Korean army literally weeping with adoration as though, you know, the Messiah had returned. You know, and so this is what scares me. And, you know, you've obviously studied the country for a long time and worked on the National Security Council, advising presidents and national security advisors about what to do. If you have a combination of an immature young guy who's drunk with power and perhaps is somewhat delusional, and then you've got these sycophantic generals who are trying to not only prove themselves, but they're afraid that they're going to be executed too, aren't they going to come to him with all kinds of crackpot schemes?
Very much that's a possibility. So not only should we be afraid of the traditional form of provocation like a missile test or nuclear test, but they could come up with something even more creative and more dangerous. That's what I meant by Kim Jong-un now looking like he's even more dangerous than his father. And I never thought I would say that. I actually miss Kim Jong-il than dealing with this guy. Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct in thinking that.
So what do you hear from South Korea then?
I think they're bracing for a potential provocation to come. It'll be interesting to see what President Park does under this whole new trust politic policy. Part of that is to not cower to the North Koreans. And if North Koreans act out, that South Koreans will now respond in kind. So we will see what President Park does. So we're entering a dangerous period in the next coming months in the new year. I know North Koreans will act out, and South Koreans promised this time that they will return fire. So we're entering a period of some sort of dangerous period.
So, but what about the broader geopolitics in that area? We've already had a lot of tensions over China's claims over islands, which, they tried to claim the airspace. It led to the U.S. flying B-52s over these islands that both Japan and China claim. There's also a territorial claim between South Korea and China over some submerged rocks, which have created also some tensions. So I'm trying to figure out this triangulation here between the North and South Korea and China, where you have a paradox that where South Korean movies and television are popular in China, as are South Korean goods, tremendous trade between the two. On the other hand, China basically, you know, gives an economic lifeline to this failed state next door to them, and there are a lot of exiled North Koreans in China who apparently have all been recalled by Kim Jong-un, and that's got to be scary as hell when you get recalled by a guy who's just executed his uncle. So I'm trying to understand here what will happen to that, what's going on between China and South Korea on the one hand, and the fact that the Chinese must be upset that
there's another wrinkle geopolitically in the region. There's also South Korea and Japan. Their relationship has not been that great recently. But listen, I do think that this Jiang's execution presents an unprecedented opportunity here to work with the Chinese. China has been this year increasingly showing concerns about the direction that Kim Jong-un has been taking. More so this year than the past, let's put it that way. In late September, China issued this whole big, long list, 236-page list of dual use and other materials with potential military applications that it was banning from exports to Pyongyang. And they've been doing this kind of things increasingly more so. So I think Chang's execution is likely to further strain relationship between Beijing and Pyongyang. Because as we talked about, Chang was the chief envoy between the two states. So I think this could potentially make Xi Jinping, the Chinese president, more receptive to further curbs on, you know, cracking down on the North Koreans and particularly their nuclear and ballistic missile program. So I do think this actually presents an opportunity for Madam Park, President Park, and President Obama to try to really engage the Chinese. And until now, it has been very, very difficult to do that, as you know. But I do think this time there is an opportunity. I mean, Beijing cannot be happy with this. They must be quite nervous about what is going on in North Korea. So, and I know that, you know, and you know that Beijing has been historically unwilling to apply too much pressure to North Korea for fear of precipitating a regime collapse. But I think Kim Jong-un's erratic behavior may be, you know, somewhat changing the calculus in Beijing. So this is still an opportunity to talk to China.
So I've followed the Chinese media, and apparently they've, over the last, since Kim Jong-un came in, there have been some reports in the Chinese media that have been very critical of him, and there have even been some references to the fat boy, the spoiled kid. Those kind of references, which I find pretty surprising coming from China, they're not totally official, but at least they're in the media, and anything that gets out in the media in China is, by definition, official.
Right. No, absolutely, and this is what I mean. So this year, we've seen much more of that in academic journals, more Chinese, at least in track two, a lot of Chinese scholars, academics have been saying that, and Xi Jinping himself criticized Kim Jong-un by name earlier. So I do think there is definitely an opportunity for South Korea and Washington to talk to the Chinese, as I said.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Sumi Terry.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Sumi Terry, who's a senior research scholar at the Weatherhead East Asian Institute at Columbia University and the managing director at Gerson Global Advisors. Previously, she was a National Intelligence Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, the former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council, and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs at the National Security Council. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.